Welcome to the Brew Files from Experimental Brewing, our quick hit series where we focus on fundamental aspects of brewing, including styles, techniques, and recipes. More brew, more flavor, more stories, less time, and less ukulele. In this episode, competition style guidelines aren't always a perfect fit to describe all the tasty beers we can make at home. But nevertheless, a winning beer can keep on winning. Tom Fontes won the Doug King Memorial competition with his not really a New Zealand Pilsner Pilsner because it was damn tasty. If you want to make a speedy, crisp, and hoppy lager for summer, Tom's got you covered. But first, a message from our sponsors.
The next generation of countertop home distillation systems is here. The all-new AirStill Pro from Still Spirits is a revolutionary still that will look right at home alongside your everyday kitchen appliances. This small batch 2-in-1 distillation system operates in either pot still or reflux mode and allows you to craft high-quality light and dark spirits at home. No hoses, no complicated assembly, just plug and play. The AirStill Pro column cools itself with a built-in high-powered fan. The Still Spirits AirStill Pro is available now at your favorite homebrew retailer. Learn more about the AirStill Pro at stillspirits.com or check them out on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube.
All right, and welcome back, everybody. And as always, if you talk to any of our sponsors, please let them know that you heard about them here on the Brew Files so that they know they're spending their money judiciously. And as I said in the intro, we are here to talk today about a not quite New Zealand Pilsner, New Zealand Pilsner. Is that right?
That is right.
Tom, go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody.
Hello, everybody. My name is Tom Fontes, home brewer. I live in Long Beach, California. I'm a member of the Long Beach Homebrewers. Oh, actually, just a newly appointed vice president of the Long Beach Homebrewers.
Oh, didn't run fast enough, did you?
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm also a dues-paying member of the SoCal Cerveceros and Orange County Matchups.
Too big for one club.
Not quite, but I like to get out there and, you know, meet everyone that, you know, shares the same interest.
It's the same thing as I always talk about with HomebrewCon. It's nice when you have a place to go to talk to people whose eyes don't glaze over the second you start talking about mash regimes.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. Now, the reason why we're talking to Tom is Tom won the Doug King Memorial Competition, which the Maltose Falcons put on every year. And it's nominally a specialty beer and lager beer competition. You can go back in time and listen to previous episodes where we talked to winners about why that is. And in this particular case, Tom won with, as I had said before, a not New Zealand, New Zealand Pilsner. So, Tom, before we get into that, how long have you actually been brewing?
I've been brewing a little over 8 years now. Just before my daughter was born, my wife had bought me a 1 gallon IPA kit from Brooklyn Brew Shop. And she made that big mistake, and it's been getting crazier ever since.
What hath I wrought?
Right.
All right. And in that 8 years, I mean, you've been a force out there because we've run into each other multiple times and you're always competing. You're always brewing. Now, what do you normally brew?
Normally hoppy beers or just like crispy, like, either, lagers, sometimes hoppy, sometimes not, you know, I like easy drinking. I like crisp and I like hops as well. Very rarely will I do a stout or something like that, but you know, I've run the gamut. There's different, you know, styles of the month that the Long Beach Homebrewers put on and mashups as well, that, you know, get you outside of your wheelhouse brewing other styles, which, you know, I love to do and take part in. Gets you out there. You find new stuff. No. Sometimes saisons as well. But yeah, I keep it in the wheelhouse for the most part.
So in other words, if a lot of your wheelhouse is hoppy beers and lagerish type beers, this beer that we're about to talk about is pretty much dead center of that.
It's a blend of my loves. Yeah. So right in the middle of the two, for sure.
The joke that we've been saying, a not New Zealand, New Zealand Pilsner. If I remember correctly from our previous conversation, this beer that won the Best of Show at Doug King, you entered it as a New Zealand Pilsner because there was no other place to really put it, right?
I had to put it into a category. Like, yeah, just as I said at the happy hour, that's what happened. You know, you, after drinking it and, you know, looking at the guidelines, looking at the, you know, the categories to where to enter it. That's the one that I thought it might fit best. And it seemed to be a pretty good choice, you know, in hindsight, obviously, but, yeah, no New Zealand hops were used,
right?
But we can pretend, you know,
no Kiwis are harmed in the making of this beer, no. Which by the way, this does point to a, deficiency in some of the guidelines where I think these days we need a modern West Coast lager beer class just to capture all these things like Timbo and all these sort of West Coast hoppy pilsners that are happening.
Absolutely. The BJCP in some ways is kind of, you know, it takes a while, I guess, but it can definitely be, you know, put in there to where these styles can be, you know, accepted or, you know, made for at least provisionary, at least for some time. But yeah, it's the time is now, Mr. Strong.
So let's walk through the homebrew recipe and then we'll talk about what you ended up getting to do with this recipe after you won. So lay it on me for a 5 gallon batch. Or wait, do you normally do 5 gallon batches?
This was targeting a 6 gallon. I normally shoot for 6 because if I'm hopping, I'm going to get some loss there. And I like to get as close as I can to 5 in the keg. So I always shoot for 6.
All right.
If I'm going this size, you know.
All right. So for 6 gallons, let's start with the water, actually, because lager and LA water is sort of strange. Very variable.
It is and can be. Absolutely. I use my Primo water from my, they used to be Glacier machines, but now they're all Primo machines. So it's pretty close to RO. I've done Ward Labs tests on them. So I have, it's very close to zero. So you may as well, you know, say it's either just RO water and a zero slate. So I used about 10.5 gallons of that.
Okay. Any salts added to it?
Absolutely. So I'm shooting, let's see, we got a 98 ppm calcium, 11.5 ppm magnesium, sodium's at 9, which is the base of my water, and sulfate. The highest of all the categories is at 161 ish. Mm-hmm. And the chlorides about half of that at 88.5. And then the bicarbs at a low 12.
Yeah. See, I'm kind of jealous of that sodium level. I just saw our water report for last month here in Pasadena and the sodium was 75 parts per million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A little high.
Yeah. Gonna have to cut that with something.
Yep.
Unless you're going dark, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you're going anywhere light, you got to cut it. So that all my cream ales are going to need about 30% RO. Oh, well. All right. So we got the water treatment there. Then let's dig into the malt. What do we got?
Malt's very simple. 95.5% of Pilsner malt. I used Origin Malting. They're classic pills.
Okay.
And the rest remaining would be 4.5% of Carapils.
Okay.
So pills and Carapils, and that's it.
And then what OG are we targeting?
Let's see. Targeting 1049, and actually I hit it, okay. Which I don't freak out about numbers. I don't care. It's going to be beer. I learned that from you and Denny. Like, it's going to become beer, you know. But I do record the numbers, you know, and sometimes I hit it. Sometimes I'm a few up or down. It whatever. It's all good.
Now, what are you brewing on?
I am brewing on. Let's see. It's a. I'm using single vessel brew in a bag. That's it's hybrid direct fire and rims. So during the mash, I will hold temp with rims.
Mm-hmm.
To hold temperature, but I can also direct fire assist with gas that that it's on, to either aid into step mash or, you know, just, you know, pull the bag out and begin the boil like instantly. So mm-hmm. it's sitting there, it's all ready to go.
So, this sounds like a homebrewed rig.
It's absolutely a homebrewed rig. Yeah. Built from found parts that I've found while working in the UPS truck. I can probably, tell you where I got each part all the way down to the casters,
It gives a whole new meaning to the idea of fell off the back of the truck.
Right.
So we got the rims / direct fire, very simple malt bill again, just Pilsner and Carapils with the water that's adjusted to have more sulfate than chloride from a base of near RO.
Yeah.
What are we doing for mash with that simple grain bill?
I just went for a straight about 60, 65 minutes with a 149 Fahrenheit target.
Okay. So trying to aim dryish with simple sugars.
Yeah. Okay. Pretty dry. Yeah.
Mash, lauter, boil. And actually for you, since it's a brew in a bag, just lift. Mm-hmm. Now, do you do a full volume mash with your brew in a bag, or do you still sparge?
Most of the time I do full volume. Sometimes I've been omitting 1 gallon of water from my original just water addition and chilling it, and I will water back after prior to whirlpool, and adding that last gallon of cold water will get me below 200 instantly. Mm-hmm. And pretty much at a whirlpool temperature right off the bat.
Right. So if you're kind of going for a cool pool.
Yeah. Yeah. Or whirlpool, depending on how much water you use. this is my little trick I've been doing. I haven't talked about it much, but, if I shoot for around like 18% of my water, that should be left at that time after the boil and it's been kind of cooled, I'm going to get down to the temperatures that I want to whirlpool at, and, adding that water to it, to water that was already boiling, it's going to pasteurize and whatnot. And the hops are going to be already there. The temperature is going to be right. And that's when I normally start whirlpooling. Pretty sure I did that with this beer. Mm-hmm. Otherwise I'm running the counterflow chiller to get down to about, 185, 180 before I throw in the whirlpool hops.
Okay. So,
but before we get there, let's do the hops, right?
Backing up.
Yeah. Let's see. At 60 minutes, just a half ounce of Tettnang. I'm still calling it a Pilsner. So why not use a German noble hop for a little, tiny bittering charge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a 7.4 IBU. No more hops additions until, is that flame out?
Do you separate the idea of flame out from whirlpool?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Yeah. So flame out would be, just once I turn off the heat, I threw in only a half ounce of Idaho 158, also known now as Pink, through Yakima Valley hops. Those hops are the ones that I really wanted to feature in this beer. So it was going to be a primarily, beside the bittering hop of Tettnang, going to be an Idaho 158, beer. So after that small flame out addition and then pretty much immediate cooling with the water, like I said, mm-hmm. and then it's already at an immediate, whirlpool temperature, which I shoot for like 180. Then I threw in 3.5 ounces of the Idaho 158.
Right. Yeah. And so let's tell people about the Pink, because I pulled up the specs on it, and it's from the same folks who brought Idaho 7 out to the market. So got a good ranch lineage, shall we say. And the aroma profile that I put on it is citrus, stone fruit, honey, pine, and apple. They don't say anything about the kitchen sink, though.
No more vanilla in there? There was a vanilla before as one of their specs.
They do list it in the textual description, but when they just have their call out.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so subtle flavors of honey, apple, and vanilla on top of a combo of citrus and stone fruit. So very modern in a lot of ways, but not, without necessarily as much as like the tropical component, like you'd find in some of those New Zealand hops. So we're not seeing like melons and mangoes and guavas and all that. We're seeing citrus and stone fruit combined with a couple of other characteristics.
Yeah.
Okay. And how did you discover this particular hop?
around Black Friday, you know, when all the sales go on, I was just looking through and just building up my shopping cart through Yakima Valley, in this case, and going through there, you know, getting my Citras and Lupo Max, this and that. And I came across this one and I saw it, you know, hey, I know Idaho 7, I'm, you know, not the biggest fan, but let's try this. So I bought a half a pound, so 8 ounces.
Well, and you could hit it pretty hard.
I did, at least for this beer, you know, it was experimental. It was this brew day actually was a fun day with members of the Long Beach Homebrew Club that were at my house that I'll invite over every year to just, you know, anyone that wants to come and party and barbecue and hang out. We'll brew a beer. You can watch what I do on my system and you can hang out. Got any questions? You know, let's go. Maybe we can all learn something. So far in this recipe, that's half of my, eight ounces that I bought.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rest, we're going to go into the rest of the beer.
Okay. So we get the kind of cool pool, edition of Idaho 158 pink. And you said it was a 30-minute whirlpool, 20-minute?
Yeah, probably around 20 minutes. Okay, 20 I do minutes. Like 15, 20.
All right. We cool. Now, when you're doing a lager like this, are you trying to really force crash it down, or where do you chill to?
For these West Coasts?
Yep.
So this is prior to pitch, yes. I am, let's see, my ideal for these, like, this wasn't pressure fermented, but I didn't quite go down to like normal, like standard lager temperatures. I have it in my notes here. I pitched at 58 degrees.
Okay.
Which is what I've been doing lately.
So two questions. What did you pitch?
I pitched Cellar Science German, which is supposedly their variety that's pretty close to 3470.
It's everybody's favorite lager strain. All right.
3470 is amazing. It's my go-to. I would probably use it, like, you know, for everything, like Highland Park does.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little expensive, as are many yeasts. And I've been trying these Cellar Science, you know, offerings. I've used 4 or 5, you know, varieties so far, and
right,
trying them out, seeing what they're all about.
Right. And remind people, Cellar Science is more beers line. We got the Cellar Science German, and you said pitching at 58. Any particular reason to pitch at 58, or because you said you've been playing with it?
One of my first beers that I did with 3470 under pressure, I'd start at 58, and it turned out nice and clean. You know, I kept it there for at least a few days, and that seems to be pretty much my go-to, like if I were to use the yeast. And, you know, not want to do like your classic, you know, 48 for 3 to 4 weeks in primary or whatever it is for, you know, your true quote unquote lager fermentation, you know. Mm-hmm. Started there. It's forgiving. Why not? It's been working for me. So that's what I've been doing.
It's not broke. Don't fix it.
Yeah. So far.
How long for fermenting? I think if I remember correctly from our previous discussion, you also rise up to do a finish, right?
Yeah. So I'll leave it at 58, try to keep it there for, let's see, this was the 10th. So 3 days later, I will raise it to 65.
Okay.
And let it naturally free rise and finish out there for the duration.
Okay. And then, and how long is the duration?
Think about I walked away for it after that for 6 days, and it seemed to be at terminal after that.
So that's 9 days.
So total. that would be the 19th. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we get 9 days on the yeast. At what point do our dry hops go in?
Also on that 9th day when I did that first gravity reading and tasting.
Okay. So we get through fermentation effectively.
Yeah.
And then dry hops, and how much on the dry hops? And again, this is all the Idaho 158.
Correct. Yeah. The goal was to be a, you know, beside the bittering, was going to be the remainder of my, you know, half pound of Idaho 158, which would have been only 4 ounces of Idaho 158. But I kind of went on a tangent here and goosed it up a little bit. Don't know why.
Wait, a homebrewer going off script? That never happens.
Yeah. It's not even written in my recipe. It's only in my notes on my recipe sheet that I try to take notes of everything I do to a beer and write them down. So beside the 4 ounces of Idaho 158, I also added 1/2 ounce of Cryo Mosaic and 1.5 ounces of HBC 586.
The number gang representing.
There you go.
The little mosaic, just to kind of bump it up in the finish. Mm-hmm. Now, you said starting gravity at 1049. Oh, wait, now, how long on the hops?
A little longer than I would have liked. I think I mentioned that I did get a little bit lazy with this beer. Normally, I like to begin cold crash after like 3 days on the hops, but I began cold crash 5 days later, right, which means that I would probably keg a week after hops, so probably 2 days later after the cold crash.
Right. And so that's, and when you say cold crash, going from what to what? I mean, are you like trying to...
We were at 65 degrees and we're going to drop it to 32.
Okay, 32. And not an extended lagering time because you're literally waiting for it to hit temperature and drop the hops and go into the keg. Okay.
Yeah. For what it's worth, the fermentation vessel for this was a 10-gallon keg with a floating dip tube.
Hey, I like those things.
I know you do. Me too.
I'm looking at one right now, although it's got a wine kit.
Nice. Awesome. I'm looking at a couple.
So we got basically a week on the dry hops because you got a little slow on the crash. Yeah. How long between the time that you put it into the keg to the time that it was served at competition?
So let's see. I kegged it on Christmas, 12/25, which is 15 days after brew day. Mm-hmm. And the competition when I submitted it was, I believe January 19th was the due date.
Yep.
And these were my last two bottles. This keg went quick.
Right. Yeah.
I loved it.
And the competition's always around the 20th because that was Doug's birthday. But I think we were about a week after that.
Okay.
So realistically, by the time it was judged, it was not even in the keg for a month.
No. Uh-uh.
And by that point in time, already gone.
Yeah. Except for those two bottles.
So the beer hits the competition. The beer actually wins the competition, which is pretty rad. And then you got a chance.
Total surprise.
Yeah. Well, hey, I mean, I think if you go in expecting that you're always going to win, then you're going to do nothing but be disappointed. Yeah. So you win the competition. And again, that's, you know, like around January 25th or somewhere in that area. And then you get to go brew this at Lawless Brewing Company.
I did. Yeah, it was awesome.
And I mean, that was like literally
you
like
really 2 weeks later. It. Yeah, you facilitated it. You put the pedal to the metal and got me in touch with Josh there at Lawless. And, you know, you had the Maltose Falcons 100th happy hour coming up.
Yep.
So to try to get this and, you know, incorporate it into your tasting, you know, you kind of just, you know, got the ball rolling. And yeah, let's see, when was the competition?
It was like January 25th, 27th or something like that.
So by Valentine's Day on the 14th of February, we were brewing the beer at Lawless. So it's very quick turnaround, which is really cool.
Right. And again, you were brewing on Lawless's pilot system, which is a barrel.
Yeah. A barrel.
And I like the fact, I mean, they went and resourced everything that you used in the recipe, right?
They got it all. Yep. Everything. let's see. He was going to try to get the malt, but I think we just ended up using Vireman, which is, you know, perfectly fine. Not going to stress anything, you know, like that.
Oh no, we have to use Vireman. Mm-hmm. And again, for people, most people wouldn't be familiar with Lawless's pilot system, but it's a barrel. It's effectively three big kettles on a cart. It's kind of a homebrew system gone mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Herm system, three vessel, all side by side, direct fire. Got some jet burners under there.
Any big changes, I mean, other than the environment, any big changes for you from brewing it at home in your 6 gallon batch size to brewing it, basically 5 times larger?
Well, besides the three vessels and the time that it takes for, you know, lathering, sparging, getting up to temperature, you know,
it's pretty, longer.
it's pretty, it's, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, I've done three vessel. I've even done done some brews at my buddy Oscar's house, who's got a three stainless steel. They're 55 gallon drums, and it's a Herm system, so it's, you know, comparable to that.
Right. So now here's a big question. You'd referenced it before. You know, we got this done because last Friday was the, as we're recording this, last Friday, and actually the last Friday by the time this episode gets released, we had done the 100th Maltus Falcons happy hour there at Lawless, and we were doing it as a hybrid thing, both online and in person. And unfortunately you couldn't join us because you got sick.
Yep.
Didn't your doctor ever tell you not to do that?
They should have.
Yeah. So, and we got a chance to actually taste the beer there. Now I have to ask, have you had a chance to have the Lawless version of it yet?
I have. I was able to, get some free time. It was my daughter's birthday that following Sunday, a couple of days later, and I wasn't so ill to where I couldn't get up there. So all our friends were here. I snuck out in the morning and drove up to Lawless and, picked up the crowlers that they had for me. And while I was there, they had just a tad left on tap, and Ben was nice enough to give me a pour. So all I've had so far is that one pour of it.
Yeah. Now, by the way, for people who are not LA savvy, Tom is all the way down in Long Beach. Lawless is all the way up in North Hollywood, which, despite the name, is not actually Hollywood adjacent. It's in the middle of the valley. And so that's a little bit of a haul up the 405 to the 101
it's a trek for sure.
Quite a trek to go get a couple crawlers. I have to ask, you had the one taste. What did you think?
I thought it was very cool. Very tasty. Drum roll. You know, if you have a little audio drum roll fill right now. Actually, upon smelling it right out of the tap, I was like, whoa, something's going on here. It smelled like it was thiol boosted. I mean, it smelled and it also tasted like there was a great experiment in thiol extraction in this beer, which I don't find was the case with mine. Not at all. I got more of the specs of the Idaho 158 with maybe a little bit of goosing up, but I did get for the most part, the specs from the Idaho 158. This beer, it was good, tasty, crusher, but it was pretty different.
I just remember during the happy hour, the aromas came shooting out of that glass.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
All right. It was fairly impressive in that way. And so you're saying that your version was a little more subdued. Some of that could be just due to, you know.
The homebrewed version had very good aroma, very good flavor, just not the way that this beer turned out. Been doing some, I don't know if you've used any of these, style driven driving yeast or, like Phantasm, like these extra stuff you can use to them, but, or add to the beers, but I got notes of that just whoa.
Yeah, it didn't quite feel to me like as aggressively thiol forward as like some of the beers I've had that I've used, like Phantasm or any of those omega strains, for instance, that are GMO'd. Exactly. But it definitely felt punchy. Mm-hmm. Like fruit punchy.
Yeah.
I wonder if some of that, I mean, obviously some of that could be different lot of hops, different storage characteristics based on, when they got them. Different fermentation characteristics because of the different size of the vessels. You know,
I was also thinking about my nose. I mean, you might be able to hear it. I'm still nasally, and this is like a week later, right?
Yep.
So I was, deep into being pretty sick still, and maybe that has something to do with it. But yeah, absolutely, like the aroma just and flavor just came screaming out. I mean, it's a really cool beer nonetheless. I mean, and I'm waiting till I'm going to give it a couple of days before I pop my crowler. I gave one of my crowlers to I have a little clique of homebrewers that we're talking beer all day, every day, you know. So the guys in the north part of Long Beach have one crowler, and I'm going to open up mine on Saturday with the other guys from like my part of the town, and hopefully, you know, give it another go, and we'll see where it's at then.
Awesome sauce. And by that point in time, this episode will be out and people will be able to hear it. And also we will include a recipe in the show notes so that you don't have to go transcribing, find out. So Tom, let me ask you, if you're going to rebrew this, and I assume you're going to rebrew this or rebrew something in the ballpark, what would you do?
Well, I told you last week at the happy hour that for this beer, the homebrewed version, I thought it was super delicious. I want to rebrew it as is and see if it'll come out the same way. You know, I like to repeat beers, and, you know, I've had success with repetition, and, you know, this beer went very fast. I shared it. I drank the hell out of it. So
there you go. No better endorsement than the beer disappeared. Well, again, we will include a copy of the recipe in the show notes. I assume from what you were just saying, Tom, that it's no longer available at Lawless. Although when we talked with Josh last week, he was saying, we're going to brew this on the big system, which is also a big kudos.
Super cool.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for when that happens, and tell people where they can follow your misadventures online. Cause I know you got an Instagram account there. You're always on.
I do. Yeah. I'm at Rose Park Beer on the IG.
There you go.
Hit me up on Instagram. Say hi and, you know.
All right. Well, Tom, thank you, sir. And I hope that your taste of this on Saturday will be worth it after getting rid of all that nasal.
Thanks, Drew. Of course. Thanks for having me. This was really cool.
There you go. All right. Again, check your show notes. So long. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on another episode of the Brewfaws. We hope that you enjoyed this look at Tom's not-quite-a-New-Zealand-Pilsner-Pilsner that was absolutely a monster hit at his home, our competition, and at Lawless Brewing Company. Go make some! Remember, if you have show ideas, styles, brewers, techniques, ingredients, etc., you can drop us a line at podcast@experimentalbrew.com. You can reach us at denny@experimentalbrew.com or drew@experimentalbrew.com. You can find us on X at EXP Brewing, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Reddit, and just about every homebrew forum known to mankind. And of course, you can always find us at www.experimentalbrew.com. Don't forget, you can support the podcast by leaving us a review in Apple Podcasts, click the AHA or BYO links on the website, and by going to Patreon and pledging a buck or two or more to our charitable cause, which for this part of the year is going to be announced in the next episode. So until next time, remember, the brew is out there. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Brew Files.